Since President Obama took office in 2009, there have been 931 disaster declarations, most recently those terrible wildfires in Tennessee. And the response to almost all has been led by Craig Fugate, the administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. He steps down next month, as Obama does, and in an interview with Bloomberg View, he did not hold back, questioning why the feds essentially subsidize developers who build in coastal zones vulnerable to hurricanes, storm surges, sea level rise. He asks, why don't we call these people out and say they're socialists? Craig Fugate joins us now. So socialists, you say developers are saying, hey, private insurers won't risk covering us, but the government will. No problem.
Well, there's this argument that I saw in Florida where we know there are places that are more vulnerable to develop, and the only reason we can build there is because of things like the National Flood Insurance Program and disaster response. And my question was, why do we keep growing the risk? Why is it not getting smaller? And the answer is we set a rate of subsidy below which people change behavior. If you're underwriting the risk as a taxpayer, and that's the thing I want to make clear, is this is you, the taxpayer, you're underwriting the risk. Where's your benefit from this? Or is this solely the benefit of those that are able to develop and build in high-risk areas because you underwrite it?
Talk about that phrase you just used. We're putting the threshold underneath what makes people change behavior. In other words, people are saying, oh, you know what, we've got so few requirements, we'll still get the federal government to cover this if anything goes wrong. Why should we change anything and do anything different?
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that when I talk about the federal role, people don't always understand that what FEMA pays for is what is considered uninsured losses. So every fire station, every school, every courthouse, every public building that we put money into, that's because they didn't have insurance. And my question is, if the private sector doesn't think it's a good risk or it's not affordable, have you considered maybe building back differently or in a different place? But as long as we're going in and providing reimbursement up to 75% of those losses, there's not much of incentive to change behavior over the long term.
Well, are you saying that, I mean, it's one thing if a town or municipality really can't afford the private insurance to cover a building that maybe they know is not up to code with everything that's been developing in climate change. They just can't afford it. There's a difference between that and knowing that, you're just not going to change things because the federal government will cover it.
Well, absolutely. And that's why when we do go in after these disasters, we ask the question, what should we build this back to? And too often we end up only looking at past data, not future risk. And so what we're trying to say is we ought to build back to insurable risk so that we rebuild it one time with the taxpayers' monies. But then the private sector is managing that risk for the long term, not the taxpayer. But if we're building something new, why aren't we using the same tools of building it so it is insurable?
Yeah. Well, you have made a suggestion, or FEMA has, under your leadership, a disaster deductible. What's that?
Well, right now, when you talk about public assistance, and this is not for the families that were impacted,
right,
this is for the governments, that we have thresholds based upon a per capita per state population. So it's $1.41, so you multiply that by your 2010 census, and that is the threshold for your uninsured losses that the president would consider declaring a disaster. But when we declare that, we always go back to the first dollar. So if it was $25 million, we're going to go back to that first dollar at 75%. Now, that's not how most insurance works. Most insurance has deductibles to encourage you to take actions to minimize filing a claim. We think that setting a deductible at your threshold, so that if your disaster was $25 million, we pick up the first dollar after that, and you own the first $25 million at full cost, and then go, if you're doing things to buy down risk, let's give you credits to buy down that risk. So building codes, land use, preparedness activities, things we know that will reduce the cost of future disasters. You buy your deductible down, just like you can get credits as a driver or a homeowner for activities you take to buy down your risk. And if you don't like my answer or my suggestion, understand that the IG and General Accounting Office would like to double to triple that disaster declaration. So that you're going to go from $1.41 to over $2.80 to as much as $3 to $4 per capita. My recommendation is don't raise the threshold, create a deductible, and try to incentivize good behavior and reward that through the deductible process.
Well, you're talking about the public part of this equation, towns and cities. But when you talked about socialists, you were talking about builders and developers. And as you said to Bloomberg, people running around saying they're capitalists and they're Republicans and they're conservatives and it's all about individual freedom and making money and growing the tax base and all the BS, you say, they throw at, I mean, this is strong language, they throw at people. It's nothing but socialism and social welfare for developers when you subsidize risk below which the public gets a benefit. They've got to be called out. You're calling them out.
Yeah, well, this goes back to my experiences in Florida, and I've seen this up and down the coastal communities, where developers fight for developer rights to build in areas that are subject to storm surge from hurricanes. And the only reason they're able to do that is because they have a short transaction period, and their exposure to the risk is minimal. So they can go in there and build, they can reap their profits, and they are out of there.
Sounds like the banking crisis.
Yeah, but who gets left with the risk? The taxpayers, the local tax base, who now has an exposure that may not have made that great of a contribution to the tax base or to the jobs. These tend to be very temporary jobs. Yet in a disaster, this tends to be the most vulnerable property. It costs the most to respond to. It is those areas that you spend the bulk of the federal dollars on. And the people that went in there and built and said this is, you know, going to add jobs and add tax base had already made their money. And I'm not saying development is bad, but it needs to be in the character of, do we fully understand the risk to our tax base and what it will cost to respond to this development in a crisis, and have we factored that into the overall picture, or are we picking up those costs unintentionally or uninformed while other people have made their profits and moved on?
You talk about how much of what insurance and these considerations are based on is past weather data. It's time to look to future weather data. But there's a problem there because not everybody agrees on the future. Well, science does, but you've got a president-elect, Donald Trump, who's questioned climate change. You've got his nominee, many of them, but his nominee to the EPA, Scott Pruitt, who has. What happens to FEMA when you've got people at the highest levels of government who don't even accept the science behind the work you do?
Well, if you don't like the science, let's go back to where investors are willing to put their money in risk. Capitalism is about rewarding those investments that make you money and taking money away from those that don't. So if you can't get insurance to invest in your development, to invest in rebuilding, that might be the sign it's not insurable.
And the government, the federal government, should not then be your insurer.
Right. Let the private sector, you know, when you talk to reinsurance and other large organizations that deal with risk, historically they've looked at changing patterns, they've looked at future growth, they look at the types of things that are going to affect their investments. They basically make their investments based upon that risk and their understanding of that risk. If they're not able to invest or make available insurance because we haven't accounted for future risk, that should be the sign we're not building to the future. If we are, we should be able to get insurance. It should be affordable, and it should be the standard practice of letting the private sector manage the risk versus the public sector, you, the taxpayer, managing that risk through your subsidies and tax dollars going in after disasters.
Yeah. Do you think there's going to be, in the foreseeable future, what they're calling managed retreat, moving people from at-risk areas?
Well, that may be a new concept to some. FEMA's already been doing that all the way back to the Clinton administration, where we've had repetitive loss communities that in some cases it made more sense to relocate the community than to rebuild back only parts of it. So this will really come back to how many times can you rebuild before it is no longer economically feasible to mitigate or build back resilience in those communities. And as we start seeing these patterns of coastal impacts as well as other impacts of climate disruptions, we're going to have to make a decision. At what point do we basically say enough's enough, let's move, we can no longer continue to subsidize this risk, it's bad policy.
Yeah. Craig Fugate, what would you say to the next FEMA administrator?
Well, I would tell them that in looking at the arguments that we declare too many disasters, that the threshold is too low, Resist the temptation for simple answers of just raising the threshold. Look at how we can build incentives to buy down future risk.
Make people change their behavior, not just, yeah.
This is true of anything. If you want to change behavior, the pain point has to be at the point where people are willing to change. They want to change. They don't want to continue doing it the way it has. It's no longer something they can adjust to. But if you set the pain point too low, if you're coming in at thresholds that don't change behavior, and again, we're talking about societal behavior over large scales, not individuals, we'll see the risk grow, and we will constantly see the cost of disaster rising, but we won't have done anything to buy down that risk. And so the trick is don't get hung up in what's causing this. Look at the investment. And always remember, every time FEMA goes out the door, it is the taxpayer that's paying for that risk. Did the taxpayer get a benefit from that, or are we subsidizing risk below which communities and local officials change how they're managing their risk profiles?
It's Craig Fugate, outgoing administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Craig, thank you for speaking with us.
My pleasure.
So, should developers and towns accept more of the cost of disasters and offset that cost by changing their building behavior? Your thoughts welcome.